This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the Back of the Nest Match Report. I'm your host Mike and I'm joined by Cara and Chris as we dissect the 6-goal away day thriller that saw my Swansea PTSD well and truly triggered, and Palace get a fighting point against the resurgent Burnley. Right, morning, afternoon and evening to you one and all. Hambo is not with us this week. He has just moved house and he's doing some decorating and that kind of fun stuff. So you're stuck with us, I'm afraid. You're stuck with Cara, Chris and myself. You two drove up to Burnley yesterday. Before you give us any spoilers about the game, tell us about the drive. Tell us about the getting home at 12:30, Cara. Tell us about the fact that you couldn't fit in the other car, so you had to drive yourself. And tell us about these sweets that everyone seems to love you for.
Wow, what an intro. So we did the drive. There were too many of us to go in one car, so we split. So Chris, Eskiff and I went in my car, and DR had Nick and Nick's son Will. So we were a little two-car combo. The drive up was actually fine. I was really nervous about it because I'd heard all these stories about getting there late, and I was like, I cannot take the anxiety of that happening. So I made Chris and Eskiff leave quite early, but it was fine, wasn't it, Chris? It wasn't too bad.
Yeah, not too onerous at all. I mean, obviously you were a very good host, Cara. And to be really clear, I mean, you did the driving. I there was absolutely no one. Neither I nor Eskiff have driving licenses. And while Eskiff was very, very good and was on coffee and water, I wasn't very good. So if I had had a license, I wouldn't have been able to drive anyway. But it was a decent journey. We got there comfortably in time, comfortably enough to get to the cricket club, the famous Burnley Cricket Club, but not to get a decent beer because you couldn't really get inside, which was a bit of a shame. So I had a terrible pint of Tetley's outside.
I was going to ask whether they've upped the Jimmy Anderson memorabilia in there since the last time I was there. I presume it's just like wall-to-wall Jimmy these days. But I'm just going to give you a quick. I'm going to give you a quick update on my weekend. So I had the kids, couldn't go up there. Watched the game with a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old. But more than that, my 7-year-old son is obsessed with Squid Game at the moment, and I'd forgotten what that was. It's that Korean horror thing that everyone loved for about a week. And when those things get really popular, I deliberately don't watch them. But yeah, he seems to have got obsessed with it and was singing the song that the little doll sings in it the entire weekend, including all the way through the Palace game. And I thought, have I been a bad parent here? And somehow he's got hold of some horror. But I took them to the playground on Friday after school time, and every one of the kids in the swings area was playing this game that they play in Squid Game before they get killed. So clearly something has happened in the Matrix where this 18-rated horror has infiltrated itself to 5-, 6-, and 7-year-olds. So a weird weekend for me. But yes, probably slightly different from yours. But let's get on to some Palace news this week. Right, there's a lot of news from the Palace women. We can start, there's three games in a week, which is unheard of. They're lucky to get three games in a month, usually. It just annoys me they don't play enough. So three in a week, incredible. Let's start with the 3-2 win against Charlton at home. Because, Cara, you were there, weren't you? So give us the lowdown.
Yeah, it was really good. So I took my nephew, Toby, and it was his first ever Palace match. So I was really emotional. He didn't really care that it was his first Palace match, but he was excited to go. Particularly excited, obviously, because my mum is a Charlton fan, so he wanted to have the bragging rights over his granny, which I will not give spoilers away now. I'll tell you that at the end.
I mean, he's got that anyway, hasn't he, really, considering everything about Charlton Athletic. But yeah, carry on.
It's very true. No, that is very true. But he just wanted the opportunity to be able to go home and say in your face, which is, I think, the phrase he used in the video that we sent to her afterwards, that he really enjoyed. But anyway, no, it was really good. It was such a nice atmosphere there, like really welcoming. I'd not been there before, so didn't really know like where to go, how it worked, all that kind of stuff. But everyone was like super helpful. Loads of kids, which was lovely. Loads of families, but really nice mix of kind of groups of mates and stuff. So just as a kind of general like experience of a day out was absolutely brilliant. Really nice touch. They give posters to the kids on the way in with like all info about the squad, which was great because that meant that Toby was checking who everybody was throughout the match and stuff, and made it quite interactive for him, which was really good. The game was really exciting, really, really exciting. A little bit stressful towards the end, but really good. Palace were completely solid in the first half, which was great for us because we were behind Palace's goal. So it was really, really nice to see some of those kind of tasty challenges up close. And we went into halftime 2-0 up, goals from Millie Farrow and Kirsty Barton. Second half, definitely a bit more challenging. Charlton came up like really, really, really kind of hungry to get back into the game and not lose those points. They did get a goal back around the 70-minute mark, but then Palace made it 3-1, another Millie Farrow goal, and then Charlton scored in the 88th minute just to give us all a bit of a heart attack for the last couple of minutes of the game. But Palace did see out the game, and it was great. The players were absolutely buzzing afterwards. You could definitely see that a lot of hard work is going into them grinding out those results at the moment. And they were kind of staying for ages on the pitch after was to celebrate, and it was just a brilliant atmosphere all day, really. So definitely keen to get back and see some more.
And let's hope they play a few more at Selhurst as well. That's good. Yeah, that's great. And then in midweek, they did lose 3-1 against Reading in the WSL Cup in the Hambo Derby. Doesn't bode well for getting through that. So they're in Group D. They got 2 points from two games. Bristol City have got maximum points in Reading now. We've obviously got the three for the win. It's possible to still go through, obviously, but I think it's going to be tough. But then looking back to the league, today, on the day of recording, Palace beat Blackburn 2-1 away. Bianca Baptiste and then Sophie McLean. And then Blackburn got one back late on. But, you know, they're up to third at the moment. Imagine if Palace were in the WSL next year. On TV, on BBC, on terrestrial TV, not just Sky. That would be absolutely amazing, would it not, Cara?
It would be sensational, a thing of absolute dreams. Just to go back on the Reading one, the Reading game midweek, we actually played against Ian Dowie's niece, Natasha Dowie, which I kind of just enjoyed the fact that that was happening, but didn't enjoy it when we lost to them. But to see him on mainstream TV would be absolute dream come true.
I've just got this kind of this vision of a young Ian Dowie. It's not a horrific image.
Is that a good vision, Mike, or one you'd rather not have had?
It's not a nice one, is it? It's not a nice one, that nose. Let's move on, shall we? The under-23s absolutely still on fire. 3-0 away victory against Liverpool. The only disappointing thing was it was the same time as the first team were playing, so didn't get to see it live on the Palace player, but dominated throughout. Scott Banks opened the scoring early on, 1-0 up at half time and 3-0 at the end. Nia Kirby scoring a third. Banks with a brace. I mean, absolutely excellent stuff. That they're flying. I can't believe that they're still sixth in the league. deserve much more at the moment. They're playing really well. It's really encouraging to see, and it just shows again, like we say every week, that the academy changes and the upgrade has done so much in such a quick amount of time. Same with the under-23s. A fighting point against Fulham under-18s, and we all know how good they are after last season. So they're sitting sixth in the league as well. It's good times for Palace all round. But I think the only other point to make for this week is that today on the website, the Palace admins put up that the former captain, John Sewell, died, captain of the team back in the 60s. None of us, unfortunately, old enough to remember that, but he died age 85 after suffering with dementia. So our older listeners, I'm sure some of them will remember him. And if you've got any stories you want to share, we can put them on the next episode. Well, that's Palace this week. Let's get on to the Burnley game, shall we? Okay. So let's start off with you, Chris. Tell us, the Macca thing had been doing, Macca being injured had been doing the rumours on Twitter. We'd posted something about it, you know, who would you select if Macca isn't fit? And then strangely, a load of people said, well, you know, nobody said that he's actually injured, only a few random Twitter accounts, and people were retweeting us and saying how wrong we were and stuff. They all seemed to delete their tweets and go quiet. He was indeed injured, and he's a big old miss. So what did you think about Vieira's attempt to sort of fill the gap that he left behind?
Well, I think it was the right decision to start with the obvious thing. You know, everyone was saying, oh dear, we've lost Jimmy, but at least Eze's going to be back. I mean, it would have been absolute madness to put him in from the start in such a situation, especially, I mean, yes, they're not quite like for like, of course, because you know, MacArthur is that bit more physical, I think it's fair to say. But Burnley are famously an agricultural team in terms of the way they approach. They would have been very physical on someone on their first game back from an injury. It would have been madness to put Eze in. Kiarte is the obvious person to put in. And I think, you know, to be honest, while there were shortcomings with what happened in the game, and we'll talk about that in more at greater length, I think Ayew was the right pick because he's you know, obviously very physical. You know, people want Elise, but and I get that, but Ayew is good at that kind of physical stuff and drawing the fouls and turning back and all of those things that he does. So I thought it was frankly the right pick, and having Kiarte, he's got that physical side to his game. You know, and Luca had a blinder, as we'll talk about.
I mean, let's talk about it now. Vieira picked out Luca as one of his couple of players he gave special mention by name in the post-match. My question would have been, did Kiarte and Luca perhaps not screen the defence quite as well as Macca usually does? So talk us through how it was in the ground. Start with you, Cara. How were those two in midfield?
I don't know if they were any surprises, really. I think they did what we expected them to. Luca, as we said, had a great game. I just think the way that we were set up and the way that the game then panned out, I think, backs this up, is that they just have more qualities kind of on how we want to move forward in the game than they do necessarily screening that defence. And I think it's just a bit of a kind of balancing act, isn't it, in terms of how well we ended up pressing forward, and you've just got to kind of take what happened at the back, which is incredibly frustrating. I don't think they did. I think Luca had a great game, as Chris already mentioned. I'm not sure that the kind of link up between them was anything less than expected or anything more, if that's fair to say.
Okay. Well, just before we get on, Chris has got some stats on Luca. TalkSport today played a sample of Physical by Olivia Newton-John, and the fact that Chris just used the word physical about six times, that's all I can think of now. I've got that song going round and round in my head, and it's fucking terrible.
And there goes the parental advisory label for this week. The only thing was that I watched the game in the ground, and you can never quite tell whether your impressions of how someone's playing will be reflected by the numbers. But in this case, you know, when I checked, Luca, you know, there is a clear difference in his pass completion rate or successful pass completion rate in this game compared to all the previous appearances that he's made this season. So I won't read every single one of them out, but let's just say that the lowest.
You should. You know that Patrick and Hambo would read them all out, then read them all out again, and then dissect them.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what, I will do a kind of mini version of that. So he's only played six games. So against Tottenham, his pass completion rate was 90.9. Against Brighton, it was 87.5. Against Leicester, it was 83.1. Against Arsenal, it was 83.7. And then you see the increase in form. Newcastle, it was 90%. And Burnley, it was a stonking 93.9%. Which is, you know, his best this season, and that was how it looked from, you know, watching it in the ground. So, you know, it was pleasing to see that, you know, my judgment was right on this one occasion. I'll take that. Although the other thing I will say is that according to whoscored.com, which is where I'm getting these stats from, Luka had a less good game than Kouyaté, because Luka was 6.62 was his rating, and Kouyaté's was 6.71. So it just goes to show that numbers don't prove everything.
Sorry, I'm just choking on a Moretti that went down the wrong way. Yeah, I'm not sure I can agree with that. I think Luka was excellent for him to have a lower score than Kouyaté. We've often wondered where some of the average scores come from, who scored, but you know, he might do something amazing that takes his average up, and then everything else is average, but he ends up with a really high score. The only person that's consistently been up there in the top 10 players of the week each week for us, compared with the rest of the Premier League, is Conor Gallagher, who I thought had a very good game, but one of his quieter ones, which probably shows quite how high the bar is for him. So before we get on to negatives, because obviously a lot of people want us to discuss the negatives, let's discuss the positives. The man of the match on whoscored.com and probably everywhere else that did a man of the match, Christian Benteke. Post-match interview, standard understated. He's a cool character. He was absolutely everywhere and excellent. He was the only person really winning headers in defence. The first goal, okay, it took a deflection, but it was amazing. Okay, he missed a header that probably should have gone in, but you know, he got 9 point whatever it was on who scored, and there's good reason for that. How good was he from sitting there in the ground?
I loved him. And this is coming from somebody who hasn't always loved him, to say the least. I think, you know, the most notable, apart from the goals, obviously, but the most noticeable thing for me is how his work rate is absolutely incredible, but in a really kind of clear way. Like, he looks like he really knows what job he's on the pitch to do off the ball now. And I think that's maybe what's been missing from my point of view when he was playing for us in previous seasons. And he just looks really focused. He obviously is like, his confidence is absolutely through the roof. And Vieira mentioned him in the post-match presser as well, saying that he was particularly pleased with the kind of work that Benteke is now doing, like for the team as well, as just kind of looking for those individual goals. So I think that's the really noticeable difference when you're watching him for the whole game rather than just kind of seeing the goals. He's making a huge impact everywhere else as well as on the score sheet, I think.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I think he wouldn't be the defensive powerhouse he is without Roy having instilled that into him. I don't think that's in Vieira's managerial tactics, you know, get him to stand on a post. But for him to be probably the best defensive striker I've ever seen, it doesn't come overnight. So it's interesting that what he's added is off the ball play up at the other end. Are you saying that he's learnt from Edouard and Vieira and he's finding the right spaces, or?
Well, I wonder if he's just been given more direction with what to do there, you know? Like, obviously, we don't know, because I've got no idea what the different managers have been telling him to do. But to me, it almost looks as if the directions he's been given, as well as, like, when you go back, this is what you do, and when you go forward, you try and score goals. It's like there's a lot more direction that seems to be happening in what his job is going forward, as well as scoring goals. And I just think that's a noticeable addition to how the team are playing as a whole, rather than just how Benteke is playing.
Chris?
Yeah, I think there's a large part of this. I mean, as Cara said, we can't see what's actually happening on the training ground. I mean, if we could, you know, we'd have Bielsa's binoculars, wouldn't we? But the reality is that, you know, you can see that he is getting more chances in each game. And, you know, I mean, maybe he's taking them, maybe he's not. You know, in these games he has. But even, you know, I'm looking at things like the opportunity to equalise where he headed wide. You know, in a previous season, he might not even have been on the wavelength that that cross was going to be coming
yeah.
in.
Great point.
That early shot for the first goal, you know, I mean, that looked like an Edouard goal to me. So I do think probably there is a bit of an influence just of having someone else who's a bit more direct there. And he's thinking, hang on, I used to do that. And obviously he's doing it for the Belgium team as well, which, you know, is great to see. So long may it continue.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't give a toss about Belgium, but yeah, I get your point. I want to ask something then that occurred to me during the game. I'll ask you both. Who has had the best renaissance in the Palace team? So I was thinking the options are Joel Ward, Christian Benteke, possibly to a lesser extent Maka. Who is the real renaissance man? Has Benteke taken renaissance to a new level?
God, that's really hard to answer. I was going to try and cheat and say Crystal Palace have had the best renaissance, and then you specifically said players, so that took that cheat answer out. I don't think we can pick. I'd say like the biggest difference is definitely Benteke and Ward. Like Maka's doing amazing, but he wasn't maybe making as many mistakes as those two were previously, so didn't have as far to go. But I don't know if I can pick between the two of them, to be honest, because they're both completely, completely vital and probably as much of a shock as each other.
Well, there's some nails in your arse sitting on the fence there, Chris.
Well, I mean, the fence does look very, very comfortable, I have to say. You know, I mean, the problem is, I mean, it's such an artificial choice, isn't it? Because the reality is that both Benteke and Ward are players who people have been writing the Palace obituaries for a number of years now. You know, in Ward's case, just because, you know, he lacked that attacking dimension, was too slow, and that, you know, when he got injured, Wan-Bissaka came in and showed that position can be something different. And in the case of Benteke, you know, at least two miserable years of poor form. I think probably I would have to say that, you know, Ward performing at the level he is less surprising, perhaps. So therefore, Benteke has to take the crown for, you know, the biggest change. But both of them have got to sustain it. That's the real key here.
And Benteke is probably going to come under way more competition for that place as well than Ward, I think. So maybe we ask this question again, like in 3 months' time or something, and see which one of them has managed to continue it.
Probably totally depends on whether Nathan Ferguson ever gets fit. It's easy to forget that he exists. Or as he's referred to, we did a show, we did an hour-long Palace show on BT London the other day, Hambo, myself and Nick forgot his name and referred to him as Duncan Ferguson.
That's a very different player.
Yeah, we were discussing how many games a season Duncan Ferguson would actually play as a right-back. We basically divided it by four, and it would be one red card, then three game suspension, and then one red card. I would say Benteke simply because it's a great point, Kyle, that, you know, Ward's going to be under less. It's going to be less competition for him. But more than that, Ward, we've always been acutely aware of his limitations, but there's not been much of his career where we've questioned his defensive abilities. Hambo's often said about his cross-stopping technique, and I think that's improved. And there's been renaissances left, right, and centre from small things, but Benteke's gone from basically everyone wanting him gone to, you know, stats that are up there with the highest in the Premier League. The post-match interview when they were talking about he's got the best record away from home in the league or something this season, it's ridiculous. So it just in terms of shocking me, I've got to say Benteke. But then the difference is Joel Ward's cost 400 grand and he's in his testimonial year. So both of them deserve big hugs and big kisses.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
So support for today's Match Reaction Show is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming champion in the world. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. I like the way that rhymed, by the way. Manscaped just launched the fourth-generation trimmer, the Lawnmower 4.0, all across the Europe, and of course I got one here in America. You heard that right, it's the 4.0. Got to get T1, by the way. Join the over 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. 20% off. And free worldwide shipping with the code BOTN. Again, that's 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code BOTN at manscaped.com.
Okay, let's carry on and discuss. Well, before we discuss the negative side of the defence, let's talk about Mark Gahey's first senior goal. Now, the stat was going round and I was suckered into it that it was his first senior goal for any club. He fucking scored for England this week, didn't he? So, you know, it's not like it was that long ago to remember, but surely England counts as a senior goal. But anyway, his first senior club goal for any side, and it happened to be against Burnley. And I was thinking, we're usually the team where these stats come up. You know, they haven't scored in 10. They've never scored. So I wonder if Burnley fans were slightly annoyed to go 3-2 down to a Mark Gahey goal. But talk us through the reaction in the away end, because it was nice and loud on the TV on the totally legal stream I was watching.
It was nuts. It was like nothing. Oh, this was my first away game as well, remember? So I was experienced being in the minority in the stadium for the first time. And it was...
Your first away game?
Yeah, ever. Yep.
You chose Burnley as your first away game?
No, it wasn't necessarily the destination that was the appeal, more than just how it worked out timing-wise. But yeah, no, and so all of the reactions were just mad, and like the it coming to at the point that it came off the kind of back of that, like the rest of that first half, I think everyone was just in a little bit of shock. Like that time passed so quickly for that first half that it was just nobody really knew what to do with themselves, I don't think. So the celebrations were like nothing I've experienced in my kind of in the stadium celebration so far. And it was just an incredible buzz. Although I would say that as soon as the celebration stopped, I suddenly thought, oh my God, we've got a whole nother half to play. Like, what is going to happen? But no, everyone was just wild.
Yeah, I mean, it also disrupted my plan to go down and get a beer. But I'd just been looking at the clock thinking, yeah, it's about time if I'm going to beat the queue. Which proved prescient, as we'll talk about in a second. But yeah, it was absolute limbs. And I'm particularly strange for us because we'd got Nick and Will, me, DR, Eskiff and Cara all in the same row. So yeah, we effectively had to do kind of impromptu hugs in multiple directions and jumping up and down and all of the things that you do. The other thing, I was really surprised. Inside that ground, it looks massive. And yet, actually, when, you know, it looks bigger than some of the grounds that we've been to. But
You've not been before?
I've been three times, but I think either I was pissed before, or more likely, it didn't have the same impression on me this time.
Well, hold on, I've met you. I'm going to say it's probably choice A there.
Yeah, carry on. To be fair, it probably was quite a lot of A. But the other thing about it is that it's got multi-tiered stands on, you know, at least two sides of the ground other than where we were. And yet somehow its capacity is 22,000. Like I say, it looks massive. And their fans, to be fair, made a big noise. I mean, after we scored, we were singing Can You Hear the Burnley Sing? And when they went 2-1 up, they were very much singing Can You Hear the Palace Sing?
Yeah, and the Who Are You from the Burnley fans was brutally loud on the TV.
Yeah, no, they were good. I mean, you have to say credit to them. But yeah, just what were the celebrations like? Absolutely crazy. And, you know, I mean, it was an absolute ding-dong of a game. I mean, I think the Guardian called it a seesaw. You know, it was just, you couldn't, I mean, people who are listening to this have clearly watched it, so you know what happened. It was so hard to predict. It was one of those games where you just almost ended up, if we hadn't been emotionally bound up in it, you'd have just been laughing. I hate that phrase, one for the neutrals, but, you know, it was very, very entertaining.
From watching it from the TV, I thought it was only the last 20 minutes that Burnley offered that much for the neutral, but they did. I think we were lucky to come away with the point. You know, Guaita, he probably won't get a mention otherwise, just because he's that solid this season with that save, absolutely saved the point. But before that, it's absolutely, they did not deserve to be 2-1 up. And let's get into defending now. Let's discuss the issues around that. First of all, was it a red? It's one word answer, Cara.
Nope.
Okay. And a one word answer for you, Chris?
I mean, I'm going to ask a slightly different question. Was what a red?
I hope I've answered for the right one, actually. Yeah.
The Anderson foul.
Was it even a foul?
Right. So I was watching it, and I was on the Palace, the Back of the Nest Twitter. So I put a quick poll out for 15 minutes saying, should it have been a red card? Yep. No, or shh, it's cool. So yes was 28%, no was 35%, and shh was 37%. So basically what you're saying there is about 2/3 of people thought yes, it was a penalty, and some of the no's were probably just, you know, staunchly disagreeing that Palace should ever concede a penalty. On the TV, it was... If it was the other way around, I'd have been absolutely livid. He was the last man. He pulled him down. To me, it was a red.
He didn't.
I know people have put up stills, but...
No, he did not. The bit I take objection with is the pull him down. He did not pull him down. Yes, his hands were on him, absolutely, but he did not pull him down. And I like to think, and, you know, it will be... justice for somebody if this now happens to us later on in the season, and I'll have to then stick to this. But I would like to think that if it was the other way around, I'd actually be really, really pissed off with our player for not just staying on your feet. Because if he did not need to go down, there was no way that he got pulled down. And if he'd have stayed on his feet, one of two options, Anderson would have actually then pulled him down or taken him down in some way, or he would have been through on goal. So why go down? There's just absolutely no way that he was pulled down and he wasn't able to stay on his feet there.
Yeah, I mean, that's the usual debate, isn't it? Whether strikers do it because they're bastards or whether they do it because it's the only way that a referee gives them any attention. It's, yeah, standard.
I mean, Burnley. It's Burnley. They are bastards. I mean, did the referee strike you as being any good yesterday? Because, I mean, I probably used some rude words about him as many times as I usually do, if not probably more.
Do you know what? On the TV, it came across on the Totally Legal stream. It came across that the Burnley fans were very irate with him. I thought he actually, considering it was a game that involved a lot of tensions, a lot of little petty arguments, a lot of handbags, I thought he dealt with that pretty well. His body language when they went into him, he wasn't taking any shit. I thought he kept people on the pitch that other referees probably wouldn't have done. Some of the decisions for fouls are a little bit odd, but keeping his cool and stopping people losing their heads when they were handbags of each other, I thought him and the assistant referees did a good job. But, you know, that's just what the cameras show you. So I'm sure you see something totally different in the ground.
It was just the number of incidents, the number of free kicks that they seemed to be getting. Either we were committing a lot of unnecessary, stupid fouls in positions that gave away those free kicks.
Absolutely were. And Vieira brought that up in the post-match.
Yeah.
You know, he was asked whether we need to work on corners. And I'll leave that for the listener feedback, because obviously that's the question that's asked. His reply was, more we need to stop giving away stupid free kicks. Now, my argument for that would be, of the nine goals we conceded from set pieces this season, seven of them were corners. So, you know, swings and roundabouts on that. But, yeah, I do think there were some silly fouls, and that is one of the things that we need to tighten up on, definitely. Right, just a couple more things from the game before we get into some listener feedback. Elise, great again, looked bright as anything. My one question, he's young, but he seemed a little bit shy. There was a couple of points where he could have shot, and he seemed to want to pass it. Do you think he's a little bit too shy? Because when he came on the pitch, he was our shining light, our most likely. And maybe he should just be given a little bit more. People should tell him, "You do you. If you think you should shoot, you shoot, because you've got the talent." How did it seem at the ground?
I wouldn't say he was shy. I think I was really impressed. Obviously, everybody was. And there was a sense of, like, every time he got the ball, everybody kind of just held their breath a little bit, just as a kind of like, "Oh, what's he going to do? What's he going to do?" And that was really exciting. But I think I was impressed, actually, that he didn't just manically shoot every time he had a chance, because he was really putting thought into kind of what the team was doing and what job he'd been sent on there to do. A couple of times, I think there were like shouts of like, "Shoot, shoot," when he got the ball. And when I was looking, I was thinking, but why? He's not actually got an angle on goal here. Like, so I think there's a sense of like, get it and just like start firing shots at them to kind of, you know, wake them up a bit and put them on edge. But actually, if that then loses you possession, and looking at kind of the way that the rest of the second half went, where we were pushed really quite deep at some points, I think there is a balance to be found of just keeping possession, working around them a little bit, breaking them down, and not just panicking and taking a shot every time there's an opportunity to. So I actually kind of think the opposite on that observation. I think he did really well not to feel under pressure to just fire shots off all the time.
Yeah, fair enough. And we absolutely don't know what he was told to do. But yeah, again, he just seems to have this ability to have this extra space and time. And I've never seen a Palace player like it, including Zaha. Just the space and time he has. And perhaps I think he's got time to shoot when maybe he doesn't, you know. It from the TV, it's just it's a misleading angle. But Elise, absolutely great. A few stats that we'll just go into before we get to listener feedback. I'll say Benteke on who scored, player of the game, 9.3. He got Elise only got a 6.1, which is interesting. Jeffrey Schlupp, did he have much, Chris?
Well, I mean, he added a potential song. No, I mean, seriously.
Of course.
But seriously, he was a good option in midfield, and he had his pace, but he wasn't on long enough to really make a difference. That last patch, we were effectively just in defensive mode, it felt to me. You know, and we were holding what we'd got. And, you know, as we know, Vinny had to keep us in the game late on. So, you know, I was pleased to see him come on, because he added some pace and we needed that at that late stage. But he was on for too little time, really, to make his mark.
Yeah. And Zaha, 6.7, you know, a fairly early yellow card after the little fight he had. He struggled at times. He looked like he was going to do some pretty special things at others. Scuffed a shot that ended up being a cross that Benteke nearly put in. Another day would have gone straight in. I thought that Burnley had a game plan for him fairly well, and that probably gave Gallagher at least say a bit more space as it has done against other teams. Zaha just doing what he does, or do you think it was one of those games he was a little bit quieter than normal?
Well, he was hampered by that yellow card, and there was a point later on where I was convinced that the ref, who I thought was a bigoted, blind, biased muppet, was about to send him off. But I was delighted to, see Wilf, stay on the pitch. And of course, there was an opportunity for him to volley us into the lead in the second half, and that would have changed the game if that had gone in.
Hell of a hit.
So yeah, I thought he had a good game considering. I mean, if you score three goals, then generally speaking, in the Palace, in recent Palace history, that's a good performance. It's just the unfortunate that we also conceded three.
Cara, any final thoughts before we get into listener feedback?
No, just on Wilf, I was just going to say, I think it's right to say that they had their game plan against him, and Wilf's game plan against teams like that is to rile them up as much as possible. And that opportunity was taken away from him with that early yellow. And I think within those constraints, he did really well. He put his head down, he worked really hard, he did what he did. So I think it would be unfair to say that he didn't have a good game. I think just his normal game plan of approaching teams like that was hampered a little bit, but then he just got on with the job. So all round, pretty happy, pretty good. Worth the journey up and back down again, I think. And hopefully next game we won't concede as many.
Yeah, well, Jimmy Mack will probably be saying, that's all because of me. Zaha, I think, was a standard 7 out of 10 for Zaha, by his own very, very high standards. Right, let's do a few four-word reviews before we get into the questions, and we'll end it after that. So I'll start with one from... Oh, Jesus.
Shall I start?
Yeah, you start, yeah.
Okay, so Owen Hazen says, why was Edouard dropped?
That's how you pronounce that, is it?
Yeah.
There you go, Owen. Thanks. I'll go with Greg Jonah. Practice set piece defending.
Penny Creed says, unbeaten run goes on.
Essex Eagle says, defending not good enough.
Can we have Chris read that backwards, please, as it is spelt on the name?
I honestly thought it was Greek at first. But for listeners, I've been learning Greek on Duolingo, and that really threw me for a second.
Yep. Yeah, definitely the Essex Eagle. John David Taggart. That's a proper name, John. Elise has big future.
Vieira Saurus says, got away with it.
Alex Duncan, that was quite exciting.
Matt Clegg, sunk to their level. Interesting, Matt. Yeah, a bit harsh, but yeah, interesting.
Joe Quinn, it's fine, I guess.
Paul Hineshaw, not a bad point.
Jamie Payne, need to win headers. So apparently Anderson won 2 headers out of 9. Patrick O'Connor did his usual excellent work on looking up stats, and that is low.
David H. King's.
Go on, you go.
David H. King's says, end to end carnage.
That's Andy. What she said.
It would have been rude not to, wouldn't it? Andy Park, unlucky not to win.
And Felix Javison, Luko Jatovic isn't good enough. I think you're referring to the combination of Kouyaté and Luka. I think we discussed that. We'll discuss it again more, I'm sure, if Mac is out for a bit longer. Right, let's get to some questions before we finish up. Usual strategy. I will hit one of you with a comment from a listener, and you just give us a very brief summary of your thoughts, and then we'll go on to the next one. Start with you, Cara. Louis Tidy at Louis Tidy 05. In fact, exactly what was just mentioned. Was it right to start Luka and Kouyaté at the same time?
I think probably on balance, yes. I think Luka and AU played really well together down one side, and Kouyaté, did his job as well. That sounds really harsh, but didn't mean to sound as harsh as it was. But I think, with who we had available, then I think, on balance, it was probably the right starting lineup.
Yeah, just I don't know that many other options it had really. As Chris said, Eze certainly wasn't ready to start, and it would be a big risk against the bumbling lumps that are Burnley. So,
exactly.
Mark Drew, as ever, solid listener. Thanks to you, Mark. Chris, poor defending and set piece defending cost us again, and we were close to coming away with nil points at the end.
Well, yeah, I mean, Mark, you're absolutely right. The poor defending has been the headline, and we've deliberately not focused on that too much, just because it is, you know, we don't want to become a massive moan fest. But you know, just analyse it for a minute. I think Vieira said in his post-match interview, I'm going to give the full quote if that's okay, Mike. He was challenged on, you know, do you think that it's the set piece defending that's the problem? And he said, I think it's just about how we concede or we give away those set pieces. When you come to Burnley, you expect to suffer in the air and you have to manage. We have to deal with it. At times, I think we did it well. I don't agree. I think we need to improve that aspect of the game, because in the modern game, set pieces are massively important and we will need to spend more time in training to deal with those set pieces. So that last sentence gives reason for hope, I think. Just a couple of comments on specific incidents. With the second goal where they go ahead, there's a flick on, but it's the lack of response to that flick on that is the issue there. There's no one marking Chris Wood. So, you know, he's able to, tuck it away really straightforwardly. But interestingly, when you compare it to the Guay goal for us, Burnley had six players, including the goalkeeper, on the line. And yet still, after Anderson had had his effort and the keeper had saved it, Gray was in a position to, find a gap between them. So even having players on the line isn't necessarily the solution. Ultimately...
There's a balance, isn't there? Having half the team on the line probably means that's why he had a shitload of space, but...
The question that I was asked was, you know, by Mark there, and it's the question is, you know, is it... Well, it was a comment, really. Poor defending. Yeah, absolutely. And we've got to work on it and we've got to improve it. I think the other questions will cover some aspects on how we might improve it.
Okie dokie. Right, so Andy the Twat again. Often a listener, a great way to get on, make sure you're in every comment section, is to put a swear word in your name. Cara, set piece defending again, becoming a real concern. I cringe every time we give away a corner or free kick. Yes, so do I. How do we stop cringing?
Well, first of all, I just want to address Andy the Twat's Twitter handle, because it's Andy the Twat 1992, which suggests there's somebody else that took the handle Andy the Twat before he got it.
So I mean, presumably he's Andy the Twat Junior, and there's an Andy the Twat Senior in his family as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'll look that up later. Anyway, I might not Google it, actually. That would be weird. But set piece defending, yeah. I think essentially it's a, and I hate this phrase, it's really frustrating, but it is a work in progress, right? Like the defence we've got at the moment in terms of the way that we're playing, we've got players that can move it forward. We're a team that plays really well when the ball's on the floor. And we've got that, not down to a T, but we've got that going really well, right? And we came up against a team who are the opposite to, they're not going to allow us to play it on the floor as much as we would like to, et cetera, et cetera. And they are going to just pick out that floor as often as they can, which is what happened. So I think it's obviously a problem, but it's a problem that, like, as Chris read out, like Vieira is saying that they are working on and they're going to find, like, you know, find ways around it. I don't think we should like massively panic off the back of this game, because not every team that we come up against is going to be able to exploit that in the way that Burnley are and is going to be able to stop us from getting the ball on the floor as much as Burnley did. I cringed every single time we gave away a corner or a free kick in that game. I was hiding behind my scarf, granted. But I don't think it's going to be like that every game, because every game isn't going to be played in the same way as it is against Burnley. So as long as we sort it out before we next play Burnley or another team that can exploit it, I don't think it's going to be like a season decider for us because of the benefit that we get from the other stuff that those defenders can do.
So Mark Gahey says in the post-match that he thinks Burnley play in a way that no other team in the Premier League play. And that's quite telling. You don't usually hear comments like that. Mm. More than that, we've gone seven games unbeaten. As far as anyone's checked, the longest Premier League unbeaten run that Palace have ever had. So, that was just put on Twitter by people yesterday thinking that was probably the case. Somebody write in and tell us we're wrong, but it does sound about right. And if not, it's fucking close. Right. Luis Adam Garcia, long balls over the top. How do you defend them? Asking for a friend. I'll take that. I hadn't really thought about how young our defence actually is. You still think of Tyrick Mitchell as kind of an embryo in football socks, but he's actually 22. Gahey's younger. They haven't had that much experience of doing this. He's been at Chelsea. Nobody just batters long balls against Chelsea and gets anywhere, because if they score one, then Chelsea will score four. It'll come. I do think that is probably, at the moment, the one issue with Vieira. There's 100 positives and a couple of negatives. My worry at the start was it would be a new Pardew. Well, it isn't, because it's much more solid than that. But, we've just come from a reign of Roy Hodgson, who is the absolute master of just making sure goals don't go in. So it's going to take a little bit of time, but it'll come, I'm sure. London Eagle at World City. Chris, where can you get a wide-fitting shoe in Burnley? Presumably that means Skechers.
I did look around, but sadly didn't find anywhere. I have to say, Burnley was a pretty depressing place to visit. It probably wasn't helped by the weather, but the grey of the buildings was matched by the grey of the sky throughout our visit. And I will say that the Tesco opposite where we were parked also didn't have any cold beer, which was an outrage. For anyone who didn't listen to the preview podcast, there's a very funny story about Albert buying some shoes before going to a Palace match where he was going to be in hospitality, and they said you've got to wear smart shoes. So he went and bought some smart shoes, and then only after leaving did he realise that it was a special shop for wide-fitting shoes. And so he bought them in his normal size, but they were like clown shoes on him, and he was trying to run to the game to get in for the hospitality. So that's the reason for that story from London, or that question from London Eagle. We didn't find a shop that sold them, unfortunately.
We did probably see quite a lot of clown shoes, though, just in a human form rather than shoes.
Yeah, fair enough. But I keep hearing Jamie Redknapp doing Skechers wide fit adverts, so there probably are some in Burnley that Albert can get. Right, we'll finish with one more comment for you, Cara, from Gary T. It's been a fantastic start. I don't think we have too much to moan about. Amen, Gary. However, what needs to happen defensively? We cannot seem to defend set pieces. So dissect from that, how much of this should be positivity and how much should be a little bit of negativity? What kind of percentage are we talking?
Percentage-wise, I don't see. The thing is, I tend to be quite positive. Maybe that will be drummed out of me at some point. But let's say for the whole season, I think we're still on about 65% positivity, just because of how much those players give going forward. A game like Burnley, it just comes down to, can we score more than we concede, rather than a game of trying to keep a clean sheet, right? But there's going to be lots of other games where we will be able to keep those clean sheets, and they'll play a vital role in that. So I still think for the whole season, we're on about 65% positive. If we can work on defending those set pieces, then that will get up even higher. But look, if we had a defence that could do both straight away, we would be like a top team, winning Europe and all of that stuff. We're not there yet, but we are on our way. So let's give them the opportunity to learn that part of the game.
So if you're talking about positivity, I think 65 is a pretty good percentage there. What would your percentage be, Chris? I'm interested.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm always a glass half full person. So, yeah, I'd probably put it around that kind of, let's say 70. Yeah, because I'm similarly positive. I just wanted to come back in on the defensive thing. They'll need to sort it out on the training field. But the other thing is that, you know, we have gone through a significant change, and this is a new partnership forming in the defence. I mean, two of them are, you know, brand new to the team and brand new to playing together. Yeah, and Tyrick, as you said, is not super experienced either, although, you know, he's growing fast with every game. So what we really need, though, and what we're lacking at the moment is we don't seem to have someone who's commanding and saying, you stand there, in the way that someone like Scott Dann or Gary Cahill used to do for us. And they're you know, so that's what we're looking for. And with that tightening of that screw, then that 70% is going to go higher, I hope.
Imagine if you use the phrase tightening that screw with Albert on the pod. Well, I'm just gonna finish with positivity and say on the BBC London show that Hambo, Nick and myself did, they asked towards the end of the show, they said where would be a good finish for us? And Nick said he'd like to see us finish between fourth and seventh. And I was like, what the fuck are you on about? Fourth, you crap. Like, okay, we've lost two and that's great, but we've also only won three. So, you know, plus the fact there's a lot of very good teams in the league. Anyway, chat all over him. And after we went off air, their producer came on to us and said, I just want to say, she was a Chelsea fan. She'd mentioned it beforehand. If you finish fourth, I will get a Conor Gallagher tattoo on my arm. I absolutely promise.
Oh, dear.
So there you go. Right, we'll end it there. Thanks very much for listening. And thanks to everyone who got in touch. Please keep doing that. Every time we post something, ask them for your comments. We use them all, even if we don't read them out. So thank you very much. Keep them coming. The next preview will be for the preview for is Villa, isn't it, next weekend? So they'll be back with you at the middle of the week, and that'll be probably with you Wednesday night, Thursday. And then keep an eye on YouTube. They are still doing amazing things. I think we're up to something like 2,000 subscribers now, when it was about 20 when he started. So some of those shows are getting some serious listeners, and it's good to see. So just follow us on whatever your usual platform is. We're on are we even on TikTok now? I don't know. Does one of us run? Do you, either of you run the TikTok page?
No, even I'm too old for that.
I think Albert's running it.
Okay, well, if you want to see lots of smutty carry on style humour, then get yourself over to TikTok in that case. But otherwise, yeah, back of the nest, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, whatever. And until the next time, come on, you Palace.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.